Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, November 20th, 2024, on 91.7 FM WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Okay, this is a springboard from what is going on with me. One thing I did not talk about last week was my visit to the orthopedist. So we're going to talk about osteoarthritis, which is what I have been diagnosed with. And first thing I want to tell you about is about the incidence of osteoarthritis in the United States. So what is osteoarthritis? Osteoarthritis is joint degeneration. So it's a degenerative condition in your joints. It's thought to be, there are genetic components to it. You can have an actual autoimmune condition that's advanced osteoarthritis. So ankylosing spondylitis is a form of osteoarthritis with a bamboo appearing spine where you get joint degeneration in your spine, in your spinal column. You can just have degenerative disc disease in your back that comes with time and heredity and use. And general osteoarthritis is considered to be a disease of overuse. And there's probably a combination of overuse of joints along with nutritional factors. So if you're eating a diet that's more inflammatory and you're not eating things that will tend to rebuild your joints, you're going to be more likely to have osteoarthritis in any joint. You're going to get more osteoarthritis in joints that you use a lot. So, and over time, as you get older, there's wear and tear on your joints. It's just that some level of that is going to happen with most people. So the CDC estimates that 1 in 5 or 53.2 million U.S. adults have some form of arthritis, whether that's osteoarthritis, could be other forms of arthritis, like an autoimmune arthritis, like rheumatoid arthritis. There are estimated to be more than 100 types of arthritis, but osteoarthritis is the most common form of arthritis, and that affects like 32.5 million U.S. adults. And the high prevalence of arthritis manifests in enormous societal and personal costs. So here's the prevalence by age, gender, and ethnicity. 43% of people with osteoarthritis are 65 or older, and 88% of people with osteoarthritis are 45 years of age or older. The annual incidence of knee osteoarthritis is the highest between 55 and 64 years old. Bingo, that's me. I'm going to be 61 in a couple of weeks. More than half of individuals with symptomatic knee osteoarthritis are younger than 65. That would be me. I will be 65 in 4 years and change. So 62% of individuals with osteoarthritis are women. What do you think of that? Why do you think that might be? One hypothesis is that we don't have as much androgen. We don't have as much testosterone and DHEA as men have. And although estrogen is also a proliferative hormone, proliferative meaning that it's something that causes tissue to grow, testosterone and androgens like testosterone and DHEA are more intensely proliferative than estrogen. And because men have more of that, they have more hormone that allows tissues to grow. And so because they have more of that over time, they have more support from their androgens in keeping their cartilage. I can't believe it's because of, more physical activity. I think the level of physical activity between men and women is similar, so it's probably not that. But my guess would be that's the big difference between men and women. The other thing is that we have smaller, because of that, because of having less androgens, we have smaller bones. So the surfaces in between the bones if we're doing any kind of physical activity, we have smaller bones that are rubbing on similar kinds of joints. And so there's more wear in that way. And because we have smaller bones, we also tend to get more osteoporosis, more degeneration of the bony matrix. So I think it has to do with the lower level of androgens that women have versus men, and the fact that our bones are smaller. Among people younger than 45, osteoarthritis is more common among men. Above age 45, osteoarthritis is more common in women. So in the men who are younger than 45, that could be that it just happens to be that in general, men who are younger than 45 overall get more physical activity than women, or the kinds of physical activity they get can be more intense overall than women. Not that there are not women under 45 who do very intense physical activity. There are. It's just that the trend is that women under 45 don't, on the whole, numerically, don't get as much as men. Again, even though there are many who get very intense physical activity, because when I was under 45, I was getting way more physical activity than most people I knew, regardless of gender. But that may be why. And then once you get over 45, it's more common in women, and that has to do with the declining estrogen and the relatively lower androgens. So then there's ethnicity. 78% of individuals with osteoarthritis are non-Hispanic whites. So that's interesting. That means Black people and African American people and Latino people don't have it as much as we do. However, within their own race and ethnic groups, non-Hispanic, Black, and Hispanic populations have higher osteoarthritis than non-Hispanic whites. So that's interesting. And so that may be a numbers game, that there's just more white people in the country. So 78% of the people with osteoarthritis are white people. But within the race ethnic group, so the percentage of people that have osteoarthritis who are white is lower than the percentage within non-Hispanic Black people and Hispanic populations. Overall, they have higher rates of osteoarthritis. And that may be due to socioeconomic factors, nutritional factors, exercise factors, things like that. American Indians report among the highest prevalence of arthritis of any population in the U.S. That could be genetic. That could be inflammatory, that they tend to have because of prevalent poverty. They have higher rates of malnutrition. So the nutrition, their nutritional status overall, not that any given Native American person is going to necessarily be malnourished, but overall, as a population, they may generally not be as well nourished as their white counterparts. Documented racial disparities exist in musculoskeletal health, with arthritis having a greater impact on people of color than whites. Well, so that makes sense too. With socioeconomic reasons, it's nutritional, and probably because people, marginalized cultures in this country tend to do more physical labor. They do more jobs that require physical labor. More physical labor you do, the more likely you're going to have osteoarthritis. And so the burden of osteoarthritis. So 242 million people worldwide have symptomatic and activity-limiting osteoarthritis of the hip and or knee, and osteoarthritis pain affects sleep quality, mood, and participating in your everyday life. Absenteeism from osteoarthritis costs $10.3 billion. Total costs are $136 billion, and average direct cost is $11,000 per person per year. And so that's interesting. People with osteoarthritis experience greater pain, fatigue, levels of disability, and activity limitations than people of comparable age. While arthritis pain is extremely individualized, severe joint pain is not uncommon. Recent estimates suggest that a quarter of adults with arthritis experience severe joint pain, characterized by a score of 7 or greater on 0 to 10 pain scale. Severe joint pain occurs more often in middle-aged adults, ages 45 to 64, in women, in non-Hispanic Blacks, Hispanics, and those with a disability, and in people with concurrent health conditions such as just poor health, obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and serious psychological disease. 99% of all hip and knee replacements are done to address pain and functional limitations. Over 50% of people with knee arthritis will have a total knee replacement done during their lifetime. Wow. That's 50% of people with knee osteoarthritis are going to have a total knee replacement in their lifetime. So the odds for me are 50-50. And, well, we'll get to that. Osteoarthritis can cause depression and social isolation. They have depression or anxiety because, you know, you can't do your regular physical activities. People with osteoarthritis are likely at greater risk for depression because of their disability and fatigue associated with pain. People with doctor-diagnosed arthritis report more days in the last month of poor mental health. Social isolation and loneliness are often evident among people with osteoarthritis. Like when, you know, my knee flares, I can't go on my bike rides. And so I don't get to hang out, you know, I don't get to hang out with my friends in the way that I wanted to because I can't ride my bike the way that I wanted to. So almost 40% of people with arthritis have arthritis attributable activity limitations, like not being able to ride your bike. Limitations in usual activities. You can't walk around as much. You can't do your regular exercise. That's what happens to me. By 2040, 11.4% of all adults will experience arthritis attributable activity limitations. And Black people with knee osteoarthritis have greater prevalence, severity, progression, and worse pain and function compared with whites. And again, that may be due to socioeconomic factors. Over 60% of American Indians report reduced ability to do their daily activity levels and have mobility restrictions. So work limitations, 30% of adults with arthritis find stooping, bending, or kneeling very difficult. I can bend. Kneeling can be tough. If I kneel during a yoga class, I will have to use a cushion between my feet and my rear end to help to support me. 20% cannot or find it very difficult to walk 3 blocks or push or pull large objects. That's not a problem for me. People with osteoarthritis of working age experience lower employment rates than those without it. Research suggests that arthritis-related activity limitations might contribute to lack of employment. Latinos are more likely to report greater pain, functional limitations, and work limitations than non-Latino whites. Economic burden, an estimated 1 million knee and hip replacements are completed each year. In 2013, osteoarthritis was the second most costly health condition treated in hospitals in the U.S. I wonder what the first is. I'm assuming cardiovascular disease, but I don't know. 2013 total lost wages due to osteoarthritis were $164 billion, or over $4,000 less per adult with osteoarthritis compared to those without it. Increased absenteeism among workers with osteoarthritis is fairly well documented, with workers with osteoarthritis missing an average of 2 more days per year than those without. So that's kind of interesting stuff. That's some information, statistics about the incidence of osteoarthritis. So what happened to me? I went to visit the orthopedic physician. He was a very nice man. So when I went there, I went to UConn in stores at Royce Circle. And when I first got in, they checked me in, and then I was escorted by, I'm not sure what the woman's title was, whether she was a physician's assistant or a medical assistant of some kind. Very nice woman. I think her name was Jessica. And she took care of me, and she took me into the room and took some history from me. So I explained what had been going on with me, and she typed it into the computer. And she took me over onto a great big scale. I've never seen a scale that was so big. I think it was big enough to maybe to weigh a wheelchair, that a wheelchair could be wheeled onto it, or a walker. I don't know. So I got on the scale. They weighed me, and then I went back into the room, and then she informed me, your x-rays that you got a year ago are a year old and they want current x-rays. And I said, well, that makes sense. So then they took me. So she said, okay, here's the x-ray. It's across the hall over here. And this guy's going to take, and I can't remember his name because he was a hoot. So shout out to the guy at UConn Royce Circle who did my x-rays, the x-ray tech, because he was adorable and funny. And he seemed like a cool guy who was probably in his mid-30s and probably has kids. And he had a shaved head, and he was just fun and had a good sense of humor. And I don't remember his name. So if somebody knows his name, tell him hi. Tell him I had a great time with him, and he should keep entertaining his patients like that. But anyway, he did the x-rays. I had to do some x-ray standing, and then I had to do one x-ray sitting down. And, you know, it was fine. That was nice. And then they took me back into the room, and this very nice young man came in. He was a resident, and his name began with a B. It was Belran or Beltran or something. I couldn't remember his name. Anyway, he was great, and he interviewed me. He asked me more questions about what was going on with me. He did some physical examination on both of my knees. And then after a little while, he went out, and then he came back with Dr. Moss. And Dr. Moss came in. I said, "You're Dr. Moss." And he said, "Yes, I am." I recognized him because there's a photo of him online. So when Dr. Moss came in, he explained to me what was going on. And he looked at the x-rays and explained them to me. So his diagnosis was bilateral, both knees, even though I tend to have more flares in the right knee. I have bilateral bone-on-bone osteoarthritis. My patellas, that is my kneecaps, are rubbing against my femurs. So that is my patellas. My kneecaps are rubbing against the lower end surface of my femurs on both sides. I also have two floating calcifications of about a centimeter in diameter in the synovial fluid of my right knee. He said that this has been happening over many years, and there's likely a genetic component to it. Well, no kidding, because my sister has degenerative joint disease in her back and her neck, for sure, and maybe other places, I don't know. My mother has degenerative joint disease in her hips and already has had two hip replacements. And my father had degenerative joint disease in both his lumbar spine and his knees, so I take after him most directly. And my mother said that he had had some arthroscopy surgery on his knees. So there's definitely a genetic component there. Everybody in my family has some kind of osteoarthritis or degenerative disc or degenerative joint or something. That makes sense since I said my father had spondylosis like I do. My mother has had both hips replaced and my sister also has spondylosis. So spondylosis is just a word that means there's something wrong with your spine. And I have something wrong with my spine. Definitely from L1 to L5, and it's possible that there's something going on in the thoracics as well as my cervical spine. My chiropractor, Dr. Scott, thinks there's got to be something going on in the cervical spine because if you've got osteoarthritis elsewhere, you're going to tend to get it in your neck. And my neck definitely doesn't turn the way it used to. I had the pleasure of doing a physical exam on a teenage boy yesterday, and when you do school physicals, you have to assess their joint mobility. And so I asked the young man to turn his head in all the different directions, you know, side to side and tilting his head side to side and front and back. And I looked at his mom and said, "Oh, to be 14, right?" And because it's just amazing how far he could move his head. And she was like, "I know, right?" And she was probably a good 10, 15 years younger than me, but we're still dealing with this, right? So Dr. Moss didn't think the problem was with my meniscus. And he said that physical therapists always think it's the meniscus. I thought that was a funny thing to say. And I may have problems with my meniscus because Dr. Scott, my chiropractor, keeps moving my meniscus back into place, or so he says. So since my pain and dysfunction are currently minimal, the objection is first to manage pain. And since I have minimal pain, and when I do, it's tolerable, there's no need to offer me anti-inflammatory medication. I'm already taking a lot of things that help with inflammation, which I'll discuss. So they can also give me injections. And again, currently I don't have enough pain and inflammation to warrant any. So the first step, when they're thinking about giving you injections, is cortisone. So cortisone is an analog of cortisol. And cortisone is a great anti-inflammatory. It suppresses inflammation and you definitely feels better and it helps to take down the swelling. I said to him, that I was concerned when I expressed concern that it would break down my joint because cortisone is a catabolic hormone. It breaks tissue down. It's analog to cortisol, whose job is to run around your body and look for proteins and stuff to, and tissues to break down, turn it into sugar so you can run away from the bear. And so if you get cortisone injected directly into a body part, the body part is going to break down. And he said that only happens if you get too many repeat injections, and they limit how many you can get. So that was interesting. So if it comes to it, maybe I will get a cortisone shot someday. The next step after, if cortisone doesn't work so well, they can give you hyaluronic acid, which I appreciate because it's a substance we make in our bodies. It's a humectant, which means that it draws water to it and it makes things glide together better. So that can reduce pain. And then the third is PRP, which is platelet-rich plasma, which I'll explain. PRP injections are out of pocket, and so insurance doesn't cover them. While managing pain, concurrently, it's advised to get your knees as strong as possible. So right now, because we're not concerned about pain for me particularly, I'm generally not in enough pain to require pain medication. My pain is such that, like, I can get out of it. I the pain only happens when I'm using the part, and it's not extreme. But if it's enough that I get into a certain range of motion and I feel it, then I tend to back off on that movement so the thing can heal. But it's not enough that I need to take pain medication. And if I feel that pain, then I do some natural things to help the pain, like take Epsom salt baths, like rub Epsom salt lotion on it. Like, I have all kinds of salves that have, comfrey and teasel and goldenrod. I have other salve that's my tendon salve and rutagraviolans, rue. That's good for my tendons. And then I have an arthritis salve that has things like ginger. And I don't know if it has turmeric in it, but it definitely has ginger in it. Ginger is a great anti-inflammatory. It's a good idea to eat lots of it in your food. And you can get salves that have ginger in it. I also have salves that have camphor and menthol in it. Those are analgesics. They help to calm inflammation too. So your tiger balm or any of your Chinese salves, those are going to tend to have menthol in them. And there are other salves that have menthol that are not necessarily Chinese. So I use them sometimes too. When it's inflamed, it feels nice to put cooling stuff on. So menthol is very nice. And then, of course, there's ice. But I'll talk about that in a minute. So he said the big thing to do right now is to get your knees really strong. And he said riding your bike is good. And he felt that I needed to do something more intense than what I was doing. But he didn't tell me exactly what. So I said, okay, well, I ride my bike a lot. Right now, the pain is minimal. And I'm using this great compression sleeve that's imbued with bamboo. It really stabilizes my knee, but is still very stretchy, so it's very comfortable. And that's what I've been using to exercise. And I said, you know, riding your bike, there's different ways to do it. You can ride your bike outdoors on flat roads. You can ride your bike outdoors on roads with hills. You can ride your bike and I don't tend to do like off-road biking. Like, I don't do mountain biking, but I do ride on gravel. I'll ride on easy gravel roads, like on the rail trail or gravel roads that are easy to ride on. And this time of year, I like to do more rail trail because that you're in the woods and the trees will tend to block the wind, and there's a lot of wind right now. This time of year, if I get outside at all, because it's cold, this morning it was too cold and I wanted to, I didn't want to deal with being cold. We're not even going to get 50 degrees today. So, and some days when it's in the 40s, I will go out if it's still out, but it's windy. It's double digit winds out there. So I said, nah. So this was a good day to get on my Zwift. And I explained to him that on Zwift, you can ride easy. You can ride flat. You can ride with hills. He said, mix it up. It's fine. And he said, but you need to do something more intense than what you're doing now. And I'm like, well, I wasn't clear that he really knew what I was doing. So that day, I went out and got on my bike, and I climbed Bicknell Road to Bebbington Road to Kenderson Reservoir, because that's a nice, once I get up 89, I get on those hills, and there's some double-digit climbs there. So I did that. And, you know, this time of year, I tend to mix it up, rail trail and some road rides and, you know, sometimes hills. It depends what I feel like. But I don't tend to ride with a lot of intention or intensity in November and December because it's sort of the end of the season. And then once January comes, if I'm feeling well, then you start into your winter training and you do, you know, different kinds of exercises, maybe take some classes or do interval training on Zwift or whatever. You could do Zwift and you can do Be Cool and you can do Trainer Road and Ruvi, and they have all kinds of things that you can do. So anyway, I'll tell you about PRP, what that is. He did say, and he did tell me that was very exciting. He said to ride my bike and didn't give me any ideas about restriction. So I'm going to have to self-monitor and back off if I have a lot of pain. Right now, I told you I'm riding with the bamboo compression sleeve and minimal training and minimal pain, even with resistance on the gravel trails and hills on the road. So I was thinking about climbing Pumpkin Hill too. He didn't give me any specific exercises, which is a little frustrating. I'm already doing wall leg lifts and one-legged deadlifts 2 times a week, and I'll go to YouTube and find some more specific exercises for strengthening knees with osteoarthritis. And if all of that fails, there's a lot of pain and dysfunction, the last option is patellar replacement. He said that when you have the kind of osteoarthritis that you have, that's what you do. You replace the patellas. So that's not a TKR, total knee replacement, but it is a replacement of the patellas, because you see the superior, the top surface, I mean the highest surface, closer to the top of my body, of my patella is rubbing against my femur. And he showed me there's a white line at the top of the patella and at the femur where I'm getting calcification. So I have osteophytes. Osteophytes are little calcification growths. And I have, as I said, I have some floating calcifications inside the synovial fluid of my right leg, my right knee. And so what I need to look into is there anything that can help to moderate calcifications? I've always thought of vitamin K2 as something that can do that, but I need to do some more study on that, and I'll let you know. All right, so that was the deal. I was pleased with my care at UConn. They were all very nice. It's a very lovely facility, and Dr. Moss was very clear and very specific about what my options were, and there was no rush to give me injections or have surgery right now. So I can function with these knees, and he said, go ahead and ride your bike. So I'm going to ride my bike with attention to how much pain I'm in and how much inflammation I have. Dr. Scott Gregoric, my chiropractor, was a little frustrated because he said that, his concern is you still have to align and get function back. And he was concerned that, the doctor said, go ahead and exercise as much as you want because, we're trying to buy me time on the knees that I have. And so, I kind of agree with him. And the thing is, I'm taking a lot of things to help preserve my knees. I have virtually no pain. I'm sitting here talking to you. I have virtually no pain right now, which is great, which is very cool, which means that even though I have bone-on-bone osteoarthritis, I'm not in any pain. And that's really good. And that's probably because it's not just, a fluke. It's because of all the things that I do, all the things that I eat, the bone broth and the bone broth protein and the collagen that I take and the anti-inflammatories that I take. And the anti-inflammatories that I take are all natural. So I'll talk about those in a little bit. So what am I taking for osteoarthritis? One of the things I'm taking is collagen. So let's talk about the health benefits of collagen. So it's a key component in bones, skin, muscles, and other body parts. It may help improve skin health, relieve joint pain, and prevent bone loss, among other things. Your body makes collagen, and it's important for healthy joints, skin, bones, and muscles, and more. But as you age, just when it's harder for your body to make it, the collagen you have begins to break down. So you may be considering some supplements. Here's some science-backed reasons to take collagen. Collagen, by the way, is the most abundant protein in your body. It's the main component of connective tissues that make up several body parts, your ligaments, your skin, your tendons, and your muscles. It has a lot of important functions. It provides your skin with structure and strengthens your bones. You can get collagen from foods like bone broth and pork skin, but supplements have also become popular. Most are hydrolyzed. So we eat bone broth. Ron will So we'll get a whole chicken, a whole organic chicken, and then Ron will take the carcass and put it in a crock pot, and you cover it in water, and you let it simmer for a couple of days, you know, 1 to 2 days in the crock pot. And then, so the tissue breaks down in the collagen as it's boiling, it's simmering all that time, so you cook it on low heat. Underwater for a couple of days, and then you get a lot of the collagen components into the water, and you can skim out the fat if you want to and take out the extra bones, and now you decant it into receptacles and you store it, and now you have bone broth, and you can consume the bone broth as is. You can consume the bone broth as is and season it however you like. A great idea is to season it with anti-inflammatories like ginger and turmeric, And you could throw olive oil into it as well. But what we tend to do with, I don't tend to have sip on bone broth, even though I have some bone broth powder. You can get bone broth powder, bone broth protein in various flavors. You can get, and you use it as a protein shake. And I do that. I take bone broth protein powder, but it's chocolate. And if you're thinking, oh, that sounds gross, chicken bone broth protein isn't that going to taste like meaty chocolate. And it does not. It tastes like chocolatey chocolate. It's very good. It doesn't taste like, doesn't taste like soup. It tastes like a chocolate protein powder. And it's very good. All of the bone broth protein flavors. The vanilla is okay. It's a little harder to mask the collagen-y taste with vanilla, depending on the brand you get. However, one brand has a salted caramel flavor. That's excellent. It tastes like butterscotch. It's really wonderful. So my two favorite flavors are the salted caramel and the chocolate. And I haven't tried the banana cream. One of the brands does have banana cream, and they might also have strawberry. I haven't tried those because at my distributors, I would have to, pay retail for those, and my distributors don't have those more exotic flavors. So if I can get a packet, like if I go to a health food store and they're selling just packets of the exotic flavors, I would certainly try those. I'd want to see if they're any good. I have a patient who took the banana cream and she said it's awesome. So I would try that. The other thing you could do, if you want banana, you could get vanilla and take an actual banana and make a smoothie. And now you have banana, vanilla, bone broth protein. It's fine. So the benefits of collagen. Collagen supplements may improve your skin health because it's a major component in your skin. And for 60, almost 61, I don't look too bad. It's supposed to reduce wrinkles and dryness. So I do two things. I take collagen and then I have lotion. I have, face cream that has hyaluronic acid, all the things that help to build collagen. Well, hyaluronic acid doesn't really build collagen, but it's a humectant, as we said before, draws moisture to it. So my skin looks nice and smooth. And it has vitamin C in it. And vitamin C is a cofactor for building skin cells. And there's a lantoin in it, which is a component that's in aloe and also in comfrey. And allantoin helps with healthy skin regeneration, healthy skin cell growth. So anyway, when you take collagen supplements, it can help slow the aging of your skin by reducing wrinkles and dryness. And there was a study focusing on women that found that as little as 1 to 12 grams of collagen a day for 4 to 12 weeks led to improvements in skin elasticity and hydration. The supplements might work by stimulating your body to produce collagen and other proteins that help structure your skin, like elastin and fibrillin. And there are many anecdotal claims. That's just people telling you, not tabulated, but people saying that collagen helps prevent acne and other skin conditions. But those are anecdotal, not studied. Collagen might relieve joint pain. As I said, I don't have a lot of joint pain. So when the amount of collagen starts to decrease as you age, it puts you at risk for osteoarthritis, and that the supplements might help the symptoms of osteoarthritis and reduce overall pain. Studies of people with osteoarthritis found that taking collagen led to significant improvements in joint stiffness, but not pain or functional limitation. Research suggests supplemental collagen may accumulate in cartilage and stimulate your tissues to make collagen, which may lead to lower inflammation, better joint support, and reduced pain. But evidences need to recommend it. It may prevent bone loss because your bones are mostly made of collagen. As you age, collagen deteriorates and your bone mass decreases, which can lead to osteoporosis, which is characterized by low bone density and higher risk of fractures. Collagen supplements may inhibit the bone breakdown that leads to osteoporosis. That's good news. There was a year study of postmenopausal women. Some of the women took calcium and vitamin D with 5 grams of collagen, and some of them took it without. And those taking the calcium, D, and collagen had significantly lower blood levels of proteins that promote bone breakdown and less loss of mineral bone density than those who only took the calcium and D. So I'm taking all of those things. Another study found similar results in 66 postmenopausal women who took 5 grams of collagen for 12 months. Those who took the collagen had an increase of up to 7% in their bone mineral density, a measure of, so really, if your osteoporosis patient, if you have osteoporosis or osteopenia, and your doctor wants you to take a drug and you don't want to, or anyway, one thing to consider is to take collagen. And I should be telling my patients who have bone density issues, not only should they be doing their, I have them do calcium, vitamin K, magnesium, vitamin D. The calcium, if you're taking the right kind of vitamin K, if you're taking 45 milligrams a day of vitamin, of MK4 vitamin K, you probably don't need to take calcium. I like them to take magnesium for other reasons because it is part of structure as well. And it's also good for your muscles and your brain. And there's a lot of other uses for magnesium besides building bone. So I have people, I love to have people take magnesium. And then vitamin D, around here, it's hard to make vitamin D from the sun because we don't get the sun exposure that we need. And then K2 also is a good traffic director to get calcium into the places it's supposed to get. And so the K2 that helps to direct the calcium into your bones, that's in most studies MK4. So anyway, so I have people take those things, and I'm actually not taking MK4. My PCP keeps asking me, do you want a bone density test? And I said, I don't. I'm taking all the things you need to maintain bone density, and I'm not going to take the drugs. So why should I get the test? And also I'm zafting. I've got, you know, big bones. And I think my mother may have been diagnosed with mild bone density loss, but she also, because she has some twisting, she has some scoliosis in her back, that will often come up as lower bone density. Anyway, so collagen may promote heart health because it provides structure to your arteries. Without enough collagen, arteries can become less flexible and elastic, which may lead to atherosclerosis, which is characterized by narrowing of your arteries, which can lead to heart attacks and strokes. So in a 6-month study, 30 healthy adults took 16 grams of collagen a daily. That's a good bit. They experienced a significant reduction in measures of artery stiffness. That's good news. My goodness. And additionally, the levels of HDL rose by an average of 6%. And I have high HDL, which I'm very, my HDL sits around 80, which is very good. And there, collagen can improve gut health because you're getting in a nutrient that helps to rebuild the linings of your digestive system. So taking collagen may, it can help with leaky gut syndrome, which is, intestinal permeability. And so there's reports that, people who take it see, improvements in that. Collagen may strengthen your hair and your nails. So I think it might be doing that. More research is needed to support its effect on your hair. People report that taking collagen may help your hair and avoid it breaking as easily. And my hair is pretty decent. I never had a lot of hair. My hair, each hair, that just genetically, each of my hairs is thin, and I don't have a ton of it. But I could have less, I suppose. I feel like my hair is thinner than it was 10 years ago. Because I'm old, but my consumption of protein and collagen, because I have both the bone broth protein and the collagen as separate supplements, and that's probably helping. It might help your brain health. Some people can say that it can help improve mood and reduce anxiety symptoms. That's interesting. I feel like I'm less anxious since I've been doing all these different things to help my health since my vaccine problem and my Lyme disease. I'm calmer overall. collagen might support weight loss and help with faster metabolism, but the studies don't necessarily support it, but that needs to be researched. So collagen supplements are generally well tolerated with few side effects. Many are made from common food allergens like fish, shellfish, and eggs. And so you have to make sure that if you're going to take collagen, it's not made from a substance that you're allergic to. Some people report nausea, bloating, and heartburn when taking collagen, but not consistently. I don't have that problem. So here's some foods that are rich in collagen. Gelatin, bone broth, connective tissues of animals. So when you get the turkey or the chicken, if the gizzards are present, you know, the other body parts, the neck and stuff like that. If you're making a soup, throw them in because you'll get collagen in the soup. If you make bone broth, of course, those go into, you save those and you put them with the carcass and then you use that as part of your bone broth. Chicken skin. So we always think, oh, chicken skin's bad for you because of all the fat. That fat is not the fat you should be worried about. The fat you should be worried about is the deep fried stuff from the fast food or the deep fried stuff on chips and things like that, but not fat on chicken skin. Pork skin as well. Beef and fish also have collagen. Vitamin C is crucial for collagen synthesis. So I take extra vitamin C to help support my immune system and my collagen and my joints. And I also eat stuff with vitamin C in it. So citrus fruits, strawberries, broccoli. If you eat a large variety of produce, you're going to get plenty of vitamin C. So if you are not a person who will eat animal-based collagen, there are alternatives. The amino acid composition differs from other proteins. The possible alternatives are limited. So vegan collagen can be made from genetically modified yeast and bacteria, which contains proteins similar to collagen, and they're being investigated. So you would get the same proteins, which is basically proline, I believe it's proline, leucine, and isoleucine. But anyway, so the amino acids that are in collagen can be synthesized. And when you get collagen factors, you're looking at vitamin C and some plant-based proteins and things like that. So collagen turnover is a slow process, the most studies use a minimum of eight weeks to assess its effects on skin and nails and joints. And some studies use even a year to study this. It's probably fine to take supplements containing collagen daily. Is it safe for your kidneys? If you have kidney stones or at risk for them, you may want to avoid it. I have risk for kidney stones. I had a kidney stone. I had one kidney stone in 2019. It's 2024. That was 5 years ago. Have not had one since. Have been taking collagen for about that long and no problem. I think the big key to preventing kidney stones is a rare and precious substance, which I will show to you right now. Here it is. And so if you're listening to this on audio, I'm showing you a glass of, you guessed it, water. Now this water has some electrolytes in it. And one of the components of this particular brand of electrolytes is citric acid. Now citric acid isn't wonderful for your teeth, so it's good to do remineralizing stuff if you drink this stuff a lot. But and to drink plain water too. But citric acid helps to keep calcium in solution. So you could take electrolytes that citric acid is one of its ingredients. You could also take a lemon or a lime or a grapefruit or an orange and squeeze it into your water. And you don't have to, you know, buy anything special. You can just get the fruit and squeeze it in. So I tend not to be as crazy about flat water with citrus in it, but I love to drink seltzer water with those things squeezed into it. So that citric acid is going to help to prevent my kidney stones. I have not had kidneys. I had the one incident of a stuck kidney stone in 2019, and I haven't had one since. And I have one kidney stone sitting in one of my, it's not obstructing, some in my left kidney. It's just sitting there. It's been there. I had a CAT scan for my back in 22 and it was still there. And so I think it's going to just live there. It's not dissolving, but it's not doing anything either. So that's good. So I think, that, so the problem is that collagen has hydroxyproline in it. Proline and hydroxyproline, that can be converted into oxalate in your body, and too much oxalate can lead to kidney stones. I don't watch my oxalates either. I mean, that's one of the things they tell you, don't eat a low oxalate diet. And that would be if you're getting a lot of kidney stones. As I said, I had one in 2019, and it was probably because it was the transition from summer, fall into winter, and I was sweating too much and not hydrated enough. That's how people, especially health practitioners, that's how they get kidney stones. It's dehydration, pure and simple. And dehydration is the number one risk for, I think, I don't know if this is true, but I feel like it is, so it must be true, to quote Bill Maher. Anyway, the number one thing to do to prevent kidney stones is to drink, and drink mostly water, because if you drink water, you're going to dilute anything that's in your body, and you're going to be less likely to get kidney stones. If things can't come out of solution as readily, if there's more menstruum, I guess you will, than particulate matter. So the bottom line with collagen is that the supplements are associated with several health benefits and very few known risks. They can increase muscle mass, prevent bone loss, relieve joint pain, improve skin health, reduce wrinkles and dryness. And claims about weight loss, gut health, and brain health aren't backed by research, but it's possible. And so collagen can be helpful. And collagen is one of the things that I consume for my osteoarthritis to help to rebuild my joints. I take black cumin seed oil. There was a one-month randomized controlled trial with 116 men and women ages 50 to 70 with knee osteoarthritis. They took 7.5 milliliters of either black cumin oil or placebo oil. So 7.5 milliliters is a teaspoon and a half. And just so you know, if you take liquid black cumin seed oil, it tastes peppery. Not everybody likes it. But it's easier to get more in if you're willing to do the liquid. If you can just suck it up and take the peppery liquid, you don't have to take the pills. If you take pills, you have to take a lot of pills. It's definitely more economical to take the liquid, which is what I do, and I just deal with the taste. I don't think it tastes bad. It's just weird because it's peppery. It doesn't taste like fish or fish oil or another nut. It tastes kind of like black pepper, oil with black pepper in it. That's kind of what it tastes like. And so the participants were allowed to take up to 8 tablets of paracetamol. So this was obviously a British study, because paracetamol is the British or European word for acetaminophen. It's the same thing. And so acetaminophen is Tylenol, if you're not sure what that is. 500 milligrams of paracetamol. Primary outcome was the total score for knee pain, stiffness, and physical function measured by the Western. So maybe this was a Canadian study. Maybe they call it paracetamol in Canada as well. I didn't know that. Because the study was done by the Western Ontario and McMaster University Osteoarthritis Index. So the secondary outcomes were those WOMAC scores, knee pain intensity measured with a 10-point visual analog scale, participant satisfaction with the treatment, and paracetamol use. The researchers assessed the safety of the intervention by measuring a number of biochemical blood parameters. The WOMAC score improved more with black cumin oil. I have been talking with Marissa about letting go of the black cumin seed oil, because I'm taking so many things. I don't think I'm gonna, because it helps with osteoarthritis, and I didn't realize that, and it helps with blood pressure. I think we're gonna stay with the black cumin seed oil. It's not a problem for me to take it. I put a teaspoon, it's probably about that much, a teaspoon and a half in a spoon, down it goes. A bottle lasts me for a really, months. So it's economical, and I don't mind taking it, and it's probably helping me. So the participants in the black cumin oil group reported lower paracetamol, acetaminophen use, and greater satisfaction with the treatment compared to the placebo treatments. So another thing I'm taking is curcumin. Curcumin is extract of turmeric. So you've heard me go on ad nauseum about how great turmeric is for you, but I'm going to do it again. So there's a lot of high quality studies that show that turmeric has major benefits for your body and brain. And that's from the main ingredient, curcumin. So the spice known as turmeric could be one of the most effective nutritional supplements in existence. How cool is that? So turmeric is the spice that gives curry its yellow color, has been used in India for thousands of years as both a spice and medicinal herb. And turmeric compounds contain medicinal properties, the most important being curcumin. So by the way, do you know what turmeric looks like? Turmeric is in the ginger family. It's the same family as ginger. It's a gingiberaceae. So gingiber is the Latin name for ginger. And if you go to your friendly local food co-op or any grocery store, if you go to your friendly local food co-op, you can get fresh ginger root. You can also get fresh turmeric root. And if you look at them side by side, they look very similar. They have these bands around them and branching out with a little bit of bark on them. And the difference is the turmeric root tends to be the individual cylinders of the root. I mean, it's shaped like almost like a little branched out hand or an octopus or something. And because it has all these branches out, and they both are shaped like that, but the turmeric tends to be smaller. The branches are thinner. And then if you look at the inside of the turmeric, it's that bright golden yellow color, whereas the ginger is not. The ginger's kind of pale brown. And ginger and turmeric are best friends. They are great to have together, and they're great to season your food with at the same time. So you're going to get wonderful anti-inflammatory benefits, and it tastes good if you like that sort of thing. I happen to love curry, and I happen to love stuff with ginger and turmeric. Ginger, turmeric, and cumin. Cumin is not the same thing as black cumin, and curcumin is not the same thing as black cumin or cumin. Cumin is a different plant. And not only that, cumin, black cumin seed, and curcumin are all in different families, but they have sort of similar flavor profiles, which may be why they all have that cumin word in them. But curcumin and cumin are not the same thing. Curcumin is extract of turmeric. Cumin is its own thing, and a very nice peppery flavor, similar to black cumin seed. And then black cumin seed, Nigella sativa, different plant altogether. So interesting, right? Black cumin seed, where ginger is a gingiberaceae, and so is turmeric. Black cumin seed is a buttercup. It's a ranunculaceae. It's in the buttercup family. I'm not sure what family plain cumin is in, but it's not either of those. Anyway, so turmeric contains bioactive compounds that have medicinal properties. It's powerfully anti-inflammatory. It's a strong antioxidant. And the curcumin content of turmeric is only about 1% to 6% by weight. So you kind of, if you want lots of anti-inflammatory effect, you need to take a supplement, an extracted supplement. And curcumin is poorly absorbed into your bloodstream. In order to experience the full effects of curcumin, its bioavailability needs to improve. It does help to consume it with black pepper, which contains piperine. Piperine is a natural substance that enhances the absorption of curcumin by, wait for it, 2,000%. So if you get a curcumin supplement that has piperine in it, or bioperine, if it says bioperine in it, same thing, it's going to help it. You're going to absorb it a lot better. Curcumin is also fat soluble, which means it breaks down and dissolves in fat or oil. That's why it's a good idea to take the supplements with a meal that's high in fat. So you take them at night with your dinner. If you can have salad that has olive oil in it, great. Or if you're having a curry that has coconut oil in it, awesome. Or avocado oil, or olive oil, whichever one. I don't know if this article talks about the other ways to make curcumin more bioavailable, so I will. So curcumin, if I want somebody to have the anti-inflammatory effect of turmeric on their digestive system, I offer them unenhanced turmerics, and you can get supplements that don't have bioperine or other ways of enhancing it. And those are good for the digestive system because they're poorly absorbed. So they're going to go right through the digestive system. You're not going to absorb very much of them, but they will hit all of the areas of your digestive system. Drinking tea with turmeric in it is a good way to do this too. You're going to get most of the turmeric hitting the lining of your digestive system, which is going to make it a great anti-inflammatory. And who I give that to is anybody who, if I want to give turmeric to people who have, for example, ulcerative colitis, who have GERD, who have gastroesophageal reflux, they have diagnosed gastritis, they have ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease. Anybody who has any GI inflammation, I want the turmeric to get all the way, to go all the way through and come out through their colon so it can exert anti-inflammatory effects. So I'll have them do curcumin that has no bioparine and no other means of enhancing. Now, if we want to enhance the turmeric to get in better, there's some neat sciencey ways to get it in. One is to attach it to phosphatidylcholine, and phosphatidylcholine is similar to lecithin. And the reason to do that, anything you attach to phosphatidylcholine that is a phytosome or a liposome, your body's very interested in absorbing that phytosome or liposome because it's a component of all of the cell membranes in your body. So your cell is going to grab onto it. It's going to incorporate the liposome into the cell membrane, and whoops, it's got some turmeric attached to it. So in it goes. It goes right into the cell. So phytosomes are a great way to do that. Phytosome or liposomal curcumin. Another method of enhancing the absorption is to make it water dispersible. And there are companies that have a compound called Therakermin, and that's several companies sell this compound Therakermin, which is water dispersible and also very, very absorbable. And then there's another compound, compounded curcumin, that has been made into amorphous curcumin. And the amorphous curcumin is also supposed to be very absorbable. I was using the Therakermin for the longest time, and then the company came to me and said, hey, why don't you try this amorphous curcumin? I said, sure. So some people take the amorphous, some people take the Therakermin. I have lots of people just taking Therakermin, and it works. It's helpful. I right now am taking curcumin phytosome that's sustained release. So I go back and forth, but that's what I'm taking right now. It's set up to be sustained release by using sunflower lecithin to stabilize the compound, so it gets released over time in my body. So that's what I'm taking right now. I have Therakermin in my cabinet, and I'll probably switch to that. And I was taking it a couple times a day when I had more inflammation. Now I'm doing pretty good, so I'm just taking it once a day. So, and you take it based on how much you need, and you can take too much. It is possible to take too much enhanced curcumin. So it can stimulate your bile flow, which is a good thing if you have a sluggish liver, but if you stimulate it too much, that's not a good thing. So that's all the time I have. So I'm going to have to pick up on this where I left off next week. So I'm going to do that. So you're going to hear more about osteoarthritis on our next show next week. And I'll tell you more about the things that I'm taking and that are helpful for osteoarthritis. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.